Welcome to Conversations with Leaders on Tremendous Life Radio, providing some of today's most influential and inspiring leaders a platform to share their stories of growing up, what happened, and what they're doing today. Now, here's your host, Todd Weaver.
We have a wonderful guest lined up for you tonight. We have Ms. Dr. Robin Smith. She's a psychologist. She's an ordained minister. She's a TV and radio personality and a best-selling author. Her latest book, Hungry, The Truth About Being Full. She's going to tell us about growing up and a lot of other things. Dr. Robin, thank you so much for taking time out and joining us on the show.
Well, thank you, Todd. It's great to be here with you and with all of those who are with us. I always say that the village and the tribe gather together so we can learn from each other, and I'm really grateful to be here with you.
Thank you so much, and we've really been looking forward to hearing your story. You're a good fit for the show, like so many other people. I see that you stepped into your own life, at your own story at one point, and you described that. Let's start right at the beginning, kind of the backstory with you. Tell us some of your early memories growing up and kind of, you know, how you were, what was going on inside of you, how it felt.
Sure. You know, one of the things that's interesting, I'm from the Philadelphia area, so I'm a native of Pennsylvania, native of Philadelphia. That's still home for me and my parents. My father died 23 years ago, but this was our family home as well. And, you know, I grew up with in a loving, nurturing family, very close to both parents, siblings who are twins and almost 11 years older than I am. And so in some ways, I was more like an only child. I learned how to, you know, play and navigate the world with my siblings already by the time I was, you know, 6 or 7. They were already off in college. And part of why I mention that when you talk about the backdrop to my story is all of the ways in which I learned how to both play and entertain and have fun, not just with friends, but also with myself. I was, now there's a recording of me as a child pretending to be a disc jockey, a radio disc jockey, which is interesting because I ended up, you know, many years later having my own radio show, 5-day-a-week radio show. So it's interesting that those things that we are sometimes playing around with go from child's play to actually a piece of our destiny. And we don't know that. We don't know that. I certainly did not know that there were very key parts of my personality, my spirit, that were being shaped very early. My world was also very diverse. It was very eclectic. My parents were so inclusive. I went to a Quaker school, so I went to a friend's school. For 10 years, I was in a Presbyterian and in a Baptist church, and then ended up going to another church. I had friends at school who were both Quaker and some who were Jewish, so I went to synagogue with friends. And so there was this rich world, racially, religiously, ethnically, that so many people miss out on. And that is a huge piece when you talk, again, about the backdrop of my story that created this very rich, soulful child who ended up into a very rich, soulful adult. Not easily, necessarily, but it's interesting as I look back on it that these very key parts of my personality and who I really am, they're the same as they were when I was adventurous, I was bold, I was sensitive, I was strong but could cry at the drop of a hat, and all those things are still true about me today.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
So there were many, many things, family influences and, you know, spiritual and educational, and all those things shaped me. Now, having said all that, what was probably my biggest teacher in my adult life, it wasn't the seminary training, and as you said, I'm an ordained minister. It wasn't the getting a doctorate, and all those things are great, and I'm proud of them, and I worked very hard. But what really created the deep work that I've done, not only in my own life and soul, but the work that I've helped, you know, thousands of other people do, whether it was television, radio, private practice, really has been through the things that didn't work out so well, through the suffering and the parts of my life that, you know, I couldn't have anticipated not working out. And those pieces of pain have been great, great teachers to usher in now a very joyful life, very different than what I expected and much richer and deeper than I ever could have imagined.
Yeah, Dr. Robin, when you're speaking on those things, it's just remarkable. It blows my mind all the time. I mean, you've done a lot of looking inward and inventorying things and looking back. I mean, when you were young and growing up, you didn't recognize all that nurturing and imprinting that you were getting, correct?
No. And really, you know, there's so many things I look back on and I think, wow, I mean, and we can't know as children and we can't even know as teenagers. And to be honest, we can't really know, I mean, whatever we think we know at 20, 25, 30, I mean, and we can know something, but we can't know what we're going to learn, if we can learn, as life takes us on this journey. And that's really what this is about. It's about each person figuring out, what is life teaching me? You know, what is the blowing of the tree or the rain? What is the lesson in my life for this day? There's a question I ask myself every morning, and this is before I do my quiet time. I have a whole, you know, thing that I do in the morning just to center and ground myself, simply because, you know, you don't quite know what's going to meet you in the day. I mean, it could be something wonderful. It could be a loss. It could be a death. It could be an illness, your own or someone else's. And so I try and begin my day always quiet. But the question I ask myself before I even do any of that, any reading, any meditating, any praying, is to ask this very simple question, which is, what is the word that God would have me hear today? So God, what is the word that you want me to hear today? And so for people who believe in God and people who don't believe in God, you can take God, you know, out of the question if that doesn't fit for you, but you can just ask, you know, what is it that the force bigger than you, what is it that your life is asking you, what's the word for your life that day? And so, for instance, today, the word that I heard, you know, pretty immediately, I don't, you know, search and look for a word, but the word I heard actually 2 days ago was handle your business, and the word I heard today was just the word receive. That's all I heard was just receive. So, and I didn't do, you know, I didn't start saying, well, receive what? Receive who? You know, what does that mean? What? I just heard just receive, you know, and so this has been a day where I've been receiving. I've been receiving information. I've been receiving some added rest that I needed because I've been on the road a lot. And so I didn't know what that meant, you know, almost before the sun came up, but I really do encourage all of us to slow down long enough. You know, we sometimes think, oh, I don't have time. We don't have time to exercise. We don't have time to meditate. We don't have time to pray. You have time, you know, 60 seconds in the morning to just ask yourself and ask your life. And if you have a higher power, to ask God or your higher power, what is your word for my life today? May I hear it?
That's beautiful, Dr. Robin. That I appreciate you mentioning those things. And something you said earlier is kind of seems a little tragic, but I guess it's the human condition that a lot of us have to hit some sort of discomfort or some, you mentioned the word pain, they're general, but to actually focus in on all the things you're beginning to talk about now. It just seems like everybody's stories kind of has that in it, you know?
It does. And you know, the thing is, C.S. Lewis, the great writer and author, and I say this in Hungary in the book, there's a quote from him that I love and I use in the book, and it says that God whispers to us in our pleasure and speaks to us in our conscience and shouts in our pain. Mm-hmm. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf and dying world. And I might say a deaf and dying and a hungry world. And so sometimes pain is the only thing that gets our attention. If you think about a lump in a woman's breast or an enlarged prostate for a man, What is that there for? It's there to get our attention. It's there to wake us up and say, hey, there's something going on in your body that you can't see and maybe you can't feel. So that lump or that enlarged area, you know, is to say, wait a minute, you got to look deeper. You've got to go have blood work. Well, the same is true in our emotional and our spiritual lives, that there are all kinds of ways in which our life is knocking at the door of our heart and at the door of our spirit, asking us to pay attention. The issue is that sometimes until we get that emotional or that spiritual or that financial lump or enlarged area, we can't hear. And so instead of hating the pain, it's time to actually listen to it so that it doesn't have to stay around forever and it doesn't have to get bigger and scarier and deadly and worse, but actually we can listen to that area that's requiring our heart and requiring our attention so that we can do something about the places in us that ache. And I'll tell you one of the things, Todd, that I've been personally really inviting into my own life more recently is how to learn from joy and not just pain.
Yeah.
How to learn from ease and effortlessness and not just hard work, because we, in this culture, particularly this American culture, we can really get kind of confused and really kind of screwed up in our thinking about, well, the way to learn is always the hard way. And I really feel like I've been challenged in a very special way to take a look at, now, is that true or is that what we've been told? And can we learn through what brings a smile to our face as much as what takes the smile away? And I'm finding that the answer is absolutely, positively yes, that what makes me joyful is equally powerful, if not more, if I would pay attention to
right.
it, as that which steals my joy.
Sure. And that's, you said so many things, you know, asking ourselves those better questions, like you mentioned, first thing in the morning, you know, if I can stay in constant student mode, like constant all the time, I maybe won't have to hit those bumps or get those lumps like you're speaking through. I believe the true wisdom is really able to learn all the lessons that God has in store for me in the joyful part without getting to the other part. And I'm not to second guess or question too much or analyze, but maybe God isn't shouting when we're in our pain. Maybe we're just listening better.
Well said. And I would, and you know, C.S. Lewis has been gone for a while, but I think as we are talking right now that he might actually say, Todd, I think you're onto something. I think you and Dr. Robin, this issue of that, maybe that is how we've learned to listen, you know, to what, like, think about even at work. I mean, often if an employer, your boss, or someone that, you know, you report to asks something in a more, in a softer way, if you're not on time as much and they say it's softer and you may not pay attention, you know, I really need to get here on time. I need to, you know, that's part of respect. It's part of honor. And sometimes I think you're absolutely right. It is maybe not that is the plan or the desire of God, but that we have not learned how to really fine-tune our hearing and respond to the more gentle and soft ways. So I'm really inviting people as I'm on the road, wherever I am, to take this pledge with me around finding how to listen in quieter, softer, more gentle ways. It's so much more loving. It's kinder. It's better care. You know, we're so weight obsessed in this culture. And I talk in Hungary about emotional anorexia. And, you know, we'll talk about that later. But we're so weight obsessed, meaning physical weight obsessed. And one of the things that I just really, it is heartbreaking for me as I watch what's on television, particularly a lot of the shows about weight, and that the way of, you know, intervention, if you will, to help people is to yell at them, to shame them, to belittle them, to berate them, and that is, you know, what gets them, you know, gets them in action, gets them in gear. And what the research shows, as well as actually many of these television shows, if you were to go and look at the people who both, you know, are quote-unquote voted off, as well as those who win, that usually that hard, harsh way of intervening, it doesn't work over time. Mm-hmm. What it does do is it makes it, you know, it embarrasses people. So when we're embarrassed, you know, particularly publicly, we want to quickly clean it up and act like we're okay. The problem with that is that once the cameras are off, whether they're literal cameras with TV or just in our families, I mean, families have different ways of shaming, you know, at the dinner table tonight. Someone will be shamed for something that they said or they didn't say or they didn't do right. And so if shame becomes how we are controlling people or how we are controlled, unfortunately, what happens is ultimately over time, whatever it is that we're trying to work on, we'll find that problem is usually right back in our face and stronger. So the, you know, the weight gain is you lost 20 pounds, but you gained that 20 plus another 20, or you try to, you know, push your anger down and swallow your rage instead of facing it. And the next thing you know, your next fight with your mother or mother-in-law or father or whomever it is not, you know, as bad. I mean, it's worse than it was. And so part of what I'm really encouraging people to really think about themselves, quietly to think about, is how you can become a gentle partner with yourself. Even if other people aren't gentle and kind, you know, we teach people how to treat us by how we treat ourselves and by how we allow people to treat us. And so if we begin just with ourselves of being kind, so how many times have, you know, people who are listening right now, has someone said to themselves, oh, I'm so stupid. That was so stupid of me. Well, we're used to saying those kinds of things and we think it's no big deal. But if we, again, are awake, and the job, I believe, right now in each of our lives, every day, every moment of every day, as best we can, is to be awake to our language, awake to our thoughts, awake to, you know, what thoughts are we trying to push away. And so what kinds of self-talk are people doing today? How are you talking to yourself? How are you treating yourself? If you make a mistake, you know, not if, when, because we all make mistakes and we all do and say things that we wish we hadn't done or said. So the question is, how do you treat yourself when you find yourself in a place that requires tenderness, not toughness?
Dr. Robin, you said so much there. I mean, we could do numerous shows on a multiple of topics. And what you said, even the negative self-talk, we talk about that quite a bit on the show. And that's, it's a tricky thing to be able to pay attention. That's run so deep in most of us for so long.
True. I mean, it's very true. Someone said to me last night that I'm doing some work with them. He said, you know, you're rubbing off on me. He said, because I was driving down the road, and he's very far across the world. And he said, I was driving down the road and something happened. And
are you there?
He said, I heard you in my head. Mm-hmm. And he said what I heard, because what he heard wasn't me. He heard himself criticizing himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I wouldn't have really paid attention to that because it's so second nature if we weren't working together right now. He said it, you know, wouldn't have been something I was aware of. And so I, you know, one of the things in Hungary that I talk about at the very beginning of the book is the quote from Carl Jung, who was a psychiatrist, and he says that the most, it's in the invitation, it's the quote in the invitation, that the most terrifying thing is to accept oneself completely. To accept, see, just think about that. The most terrifying thing is to accept oneself completely. Now, that does not mean, and I can't speak for Carl Jung, but I can say what it means to me. That doesn't mean that I accept all of my behavior as acceptable, or I accept all my behavior as desirable, but I accept that it is all of who I am in this moment. So if, you know, I don't have great discipline, if someone is listening right now and you really screwed up with your child and you yelled at them and maybe you called them a name or you did something that you really feel badly about, the danger is to push it away, to pretend it didn't happen, or to blame the other person, or to do the self-blame. And so what it would mean to sit down and say, I feel really badly about what happened, and I want to embrace all of who I am, the parts of me I'm proud of, the parts of me I'm not proud of. And that really is, Todd, what we are truly hungry for. We're hungry for an identity that can't be bought or borrowed or stolen, and that it isn't an identity that's perfect, but it is an identity that is honest, that is authentic, and that is real, and that is growing. So it's an identity that's changing as we grow ourselves.
You know, when you talked about the weight loss, it triggered something in me. You know, don't, and again, it'd probably be a whole nother show. It goes so deep, and I'm not a psychologist, but even that, putting that Band-Aid on it, doesn't it get down to the core, really, really going on, our real belief about ourselves and our own value and our own, maybe our own relationship with our own higher power and not being right with ourselves? Something just isn't. And I believe that's what you kind of inferred, as far as that's why it doesn't work for a long period of time, because we haven't really, you know, worked on the core issues. Is that something you relate
to? Yeah, I mean, yes, and that there is, that there's something in all of us that is hungry for something more than a quick fix. And food can't touch the sacred wound, and drugs and sex and shopping and working out and money. I mean, all of those things, and all of those things balanced can maybe be navigated. But when we are using those outlets, if you will, thinking that they would ever be able to quiet the holy hunger. I mean, we're talking about a holiness. I mean, this is a sacredness that our souls will not settle for a cheap surrogate. Our souls want the real thing. They want real connection. They want real love. They want authentic relationships with family and spouses. And so when we think that we can quiet a genuine, authentic, holy hunger with a cheap surrogate, our life, our soul will not participate in that. Thank God. Thank God it won't sell us short. It won't sell us cheap. It won't participate in the downfall. And that's part of what the conflict actually is, that many people are in for most of their lives, that they're really trying to figure out, how do I quiet that voice in me, that true voice in me that keeps saying, you can't live like this. You can't live being, you know, either receiving disrespect or giving it. And that voice won't really ever, fortunately, allow itself to be silenced. There's a quote that I use in the book that a soul would rather die than to live its life as someone else. So to live our lives as imposters, our souls don't want that. Our soul doesn't care if it fails or succeeds. What it cares about is, has it lived a real life? Not was it successful? Because if I'm successful but I'm not living my life, then I fail. Even if no one knows it. Even if I have bestseller books and I'm on television, I'm everywhere, and you know, thousands of people tune in or show up where I'm giving a keynote. If the person who is giving the keynote is not authentically who I was born to be, even if no one else knows it, my own soul knows, and your soul and everyone else's soul knows what is real and what is not. And so it's not about whether or not we are successful by the world standards. It's whether or not we have lived into the destiny of being who we were divinely born to be.
I believe you described the being hungry as the unrelenting craving of your heart, you know, your heart's desire, and what you're just talking about right now. I mean, yeah. And there probably is no escape. Isn't that where oftentimes restlessness might really be a good thing? It's talking to us. It's telling
absolutely.
Us maybe we need to search a little deeper and find out who we really are.
Yeah, you know, it's a great point, because when we are restless, I just preached a sermon a few weeks ago, it was called Just Be Still, and it was based on a chapter that's in the book toward the end of the book, where I talk about in 2010, it was a brutal, brutal year for me. I was in a terrible automobile accident, and my daughter dog Callie, who was really truly a daughter to me, she was 15 and a half, a Portuguese water dog, a rescue dog, and Callie got sick and she died. So the accident was in February, and she dies April 24th of 2010. And then I went to do the Today Show and came home, and it's a long story, and as I said, it's in the book, but my home had been burglarized, and every piece of jewelry, both that which had monetary value, but also family heirlooms, things from my grandmother who just died last year at 108 and a half, things from my father from medical school. I mean, many, many things that had no monetary value, as well as Callie's cremation ashes were stolen because they didn't know they were cremation ashes. So it was just awful. And then 6 weeks after that, the first floor of my home flooded. So it was, I mean, to say the least, just in those, 5 months, it was brutal. And I then had a business opportunity that I thought was going to be really the thing that allowed me to breathe and live again, given that tragedy and just other emotional hunger that I had really not owned, had not understood what I was deeply hungry for. And when that business opportunity didn't work out, I came home and from the West Coast and back to Philadelphia. And I just heard that, and I didn't know I was going to write Hungry. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was exhausted. And there was a restlessness, but what I heard was just to really stay close to home and kind of nurture and take care of myself. And I was, that December of 2010, was driving to a birthday party, and it was a Sunday afternoon. It was raining. I wasn't feeling well, didn't feel like going because I really had been having such a hard time emotionally, and physically was feeling bad still from the car accident months before. And driving to this party, I'd spent the whole weekend, and I love to eat, I love to cook, but I'm not a food obsessed kind of person. So it's not like me. It's like me to eat and then be finished eating. It's not like me to eat and then go in the refrigerator and look, I mean, there couldn't be anything new in there, I tell people, because I hadn't left the house. So I don't know if if you've ever done that, where you go, what happened? Like, what am I looking for? I was just in there, and I didn't go to the store, so there's nothing new. And so I, but this went on the whole weekend, and talking about, God trying to get my attention. And as I'm driving to this party, I wondered, was I sick? Did I have a mineral deficiency? Did I have a vitamin deficiency? What was wrong? And ultimately, as I'm driving, I hear the words, and I said them out loud, I'm hungry. And the moment I said it out loud, I knew, I didn't know it was going to become a book. I didn't know it was going to become really the phenomena that it's become. But what I knew was that some piece of the instructions for my own life had just been made clear to me. And then I pulled over and I wrote these words that are in the book about what I was hungry for. And I said, I'm hungry for real love, not crumbs I try to call a meal. I'm hungry for relationships where respect is the cornerstone of connection. I'm hungry to be in relationships that don't require me to dim my bright light in order to be offered a seat at the table. I'm hungry to have my gifts and talents truly appreciated by those I work with. I'm hungry to not need to dumb myself down so that others feel smart. I'm hungry to be beautiful and sexy and not a Barbie doll for a man. I'm hungry for a partner who doesn't feel like a predator. And it goes on to talk about other hungers and not playing small when my spirit is big and not living in fear. And ultimately, I end it with, I'm hungry to know that I am loved and irrevocably a child of God. I'm hungry to be me. And part of what happened after that, and people have said, did you really write that on the side of the road? I said, no, I really did write that on the side of the road. It wasn't inspired. I mean, it wasn't me. It was an inspired moment. But what ultimately happened is from all the things I talked about, I had because all my jewelry had been stolen, I'd been given something 2 years before in 2008 that was in a bag, a bracelet. I had never worn it. I was given it by someone. And I pulled it out because I didn't have any other jewelry, and I started wearing it, and I wore it for a couple of months. People would come in and say, oh, it's a lovely crystal bracelet. And I'd say, oh, thank you. And I was at a doctor's visit, and this is in the chapter in Hungary called Just Be Still. And I went to sign in at the orthopedic surgeon's office, and the receptionist said, oh, lovely bracelet. I said, thank you. And then she said, can I see it more closely? And I said, sure. And I mean, but it's still on my wrist. And she started, she's saying the word, she said, J-U. And she saw that I looked very puzzled that she was saying letters. And she said, Dr. Smith, didn't you know that you had letters inside the bracelet? And I said, what? No. And at this point, I say in the book, I didn't know if I was in Hollywood playing Wheel of Fortune, if God had played a trick. I didn't know what, I mean, you know, where was I? I mean, I thought I was in a doctor's office. Now somebody's reading my wrist with saying there's letters and a bracelet. Well, she starts again, and there were little small letters inside this bracelet. And so she starts reading again, kind of so we could play along together. And she reads J, U, S as in Sam, T as in Tom, and I'm thinking just, okay, then the letter B, and then S as in Sam, T-I-L-L, just be still. And here I had been, first of all, I had the bracelet for 2 years. The only reason it wasn't stolen is because I hadn't taken it out of where it had been given to me. But the real reason it wasn't stolen is because these were the instructions for me to live the rest of my life. And what I believe, and when you're talking about restlessness and dodging the messages, that whatever it is that has to happen in our lives so that we will just be still. Why? Not out of punishment, not because we're bad, but simply so we can hear what it is we need to hear, so that we can live freely and joyfully and respectfully toward ourselves and other people. And the ripping and running from ourselves, from our pain, from our truth, is something that ultimately debilitates a life. It does not inspire a life. And so, yes, you're absolutely right that restlessness, when we feel restless, when we feel like I can't sit still, when we feel like we have to be overly scheduled, we overschedule our children, we overschedule ourselves. So by the time we get to the bed at night, basically we just collapse to do it all over again. But we're missing that in that overscheduling, there is a voice, your voice, that wants you to slow down and pay attention and compassionately being awake to listen to, what does your life want you to do on behalf of yourself and those you love?
You know, that's a beautiful story you told. It struck me, and this may seem odd, but do you see today in some ways in that dark time in 2010, those struggles, that in a lot of ways a lot of those things, because you're participating in your own life and looking, are really blessings. It got your attention.
Oh, without a doubt. Those things saved my life. I mean, and I wouldn't, you know, look, I've said to God, look, let's not do that again. I joke, but not joke, you know, God saying, well, you keep on listening. You keep the wax out of your ears and you listen and you pay attention. And I don't believe that, you know, God is one to punish and harm us with hardship. So I would never say that, you know, God caused those things. What I do believe is that God is gracious and loving and will take a mess and allow a miracle to come out of it if we're willing.
Yep, that's the hit. If we're willing.
If we're willing. And so some of us, you know, it takes a while. It takes a while. And I'm one of those people, so I'm not talking about other people. I mean, I was one of those people. You know, I was so good at being knocked down. And I was doing a keynote at a convention center. And I said, you know, I have a friend, and this is in the book as well. And I don't know where in Hungary this story is told, but a friend who said, you know, you can be run over by an 18-wheeler and you just pop back up. And so recently I was doing a keynote and I said to the audience, I said, look, something's wrong with that. When you get run over by an 18-wheeler, you're not supposed to pop back up. I mean, that's when you lay down. And if you survive the 18-wheeler, you get treatment and you go to the emergency room and you get trauma care and then you have to get rehab. And I mean, you don't just pop back up. And so, but we actually often give people praise for popping back up. If you think about sports, and I'm athletic and I was, you know, a sports person when I was younger, so I played all kinds of different, you know, competitive sports. So I have the mind and the body and the wiring, if you will, and I don't mean this in a complimentary way of myself, but the wiring of an athlete. And so if you think about athletes and how much we hear about athletes playing with pain, and we applaud that. We say, oh my gosh, their ankle is broken, but it's taped up, and their finger, their hand, but they're taped and they're in terrible pain, but they're playing anyway. Like, really? Like, what would it mean for us to have, you know, a top football or baseball or basketball or soccer player or tennis, whomever, that says, you know what? I need to heal, and I'm going to let my body heal as long as it needs. I'm going to eat well. I'm going to exercise and rest, spend time with family, and hopefully I'll be on the court or the circuit when I'm able. Oh, no, no, no. See, because we're too afraid that if I don't do it now, someone will replace me. I mean, there'll be a better golfer or a younger tennis player, and that might be the truth, but what's so important is we are driven by fear and we are missing major messages that really could transform our lives. And would our lives look different? Absolutely. And people are afraid of that. I mean, I didn't know, talking about it, I have a chapter in Hungary called Identity Theft. And, you know, we think of our passports or our license being stolen, but it's bigger. A much bigger theft when your identity, your soul identity, who you were actually born to be. And the question I ask as people are, you know, here with us right now and listening is, you know, when's the last time someone saw the real you? And then more importantly, when's the last time you saw the real you? Not just somebody else. So not when's the last time your husband, your wife, your, you know, grandpa. Okay, that's important. Your kids, when's the last time your kids saw the real you, but when is the last sighting of the real you that you had? And that is really the question. Again, that's one of those questions every day that we need to be aware. Did I even show up in my own life today? Did I even see myself?
You know, I heard a speaker one time sharing her story, and she said something that just I could relate to so much. She said, I realized that I was asleep in my own life.
Yes.
And what that's a that's a drag when we come to that realization, but it's also a wonderful thing if we act on it.
Yes, it is.
That example you spoke about, say the football player, you know, there's so much involved in that, and shame, and what will they think of me, and what about my paycheck, and I'll be replaced, like you mentioned.
Absolutely.
There's so much involved. Do we ever stop and be still and stop right there and look inward and ask ourselves, what should I do now? And listen to the answer, you know, training ourselves to do that, really disciplining ourselves to do that. First, we need the desire, of course, and then to do that certainly adds a lot of value to our life and makes our life easier.
Well, you know, and Todd, one of the other things is we don't have role models, not parents, grandparents, you know, president of the United States. I don't care if it's a Democrat or Republican. I mean, it doesn't matter who's in office. We don't have our doctors, lawyers, ministers, psychologists. I mean, people, radio people, you, me. It is so rare. And this was part of what I talk about in the book. My mother was worried because she said she's 91. She's tremendous, doing very well and, you know, happy and healthy and just still growing herself. And I write this book and she said, you know, when she read the manuscript, she said, I didn't think you could top Lies at the Altar. She said, I mean, that was so solid. And she said, but Hungry is a whole different kind of, the soul of Hungry. And she said, she was 90 at the time it came out. She said, as a 90-year-old woman, I realize the places in me that are hungry that I wasn't even aware of. And then she said, then she got quiet, you know, when we know our parents. And and I said, what, mommy? And she said, oh, nothing. And then she starts stumbling. And this is a very articulate woman. I kind of knew what was coming, but I said, what? And she eventually, after some real struggle to get it out, she said, I'm worried. And I said, what are you worried about? She said, I'm worried. What are people going to think? I said, what are they going to think about what? She said, well, you know, I mean, everybody knows you as Dr. Robin. I said, uh-huh. And she said, well, what are they going to think? I said, they're going to know that the reason I have been able to be so helpful, and I said this when Oprah interviewed me, the reason I've been able to help people the way I've been able is because I myself have walked through my own dark, Death Valley. And this is not something out of a book. It's out of Hungry, but I didn't get it out of a book. I got it from my own path. And if more people and more leaders of I don't care what faith, what race, what, political affiliation any of us are in, put that aside as it relates to our souls being hungry and really begin to tell the truth that all of us, if you are living and you are breathing, you are hungry. I say in Hungry that hungry equals human and human equals hungry. Being hungry isn't a disease. It's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, we've had now, my office has been flooded with thousands of people who have said, you know, after they read the book or they saw interviews or they heard an interview like this, and they'll say, you know, I didn't know what to call what I had. I didn't know what was wrong. I didn't know what the name of this was. But now I know, and I'm not bad or I'm not weak because I have it. I'm hungry. It's like they're free, and I know what they're feeling. I mean, that feeling of I now have a name, and it's not that there's something lacking in me or, again, something weak or something that needs to be fixed. I mean, you don't fix hunger. What you do is you address the hunger. You figure out, you know, what does my heart long for? What do I really need? What is it that I say that I want? But actually, if I were to really tell the truth, if I were to really let my heart speak, it would say something very different than what my mouth is saying. So when people say, how are you? And we say, oh, fine, thank you. How are your kids? They're terrific. I mean, the truth of the matter is that really true? And even if we aren't telling the truth to someone else, do we know when we say that our child is terrific, but actually they're depressed, or that actually our marriage is on the brink of a divorce, but we say, oh, she's great, You know, you just haven't seen her because she's busy. But the real reason people haven't seen your wife or your husband is because you guys are barely seeing each other because you're having such a hard time. And so this issue of telling the truth, at least to ourselves, the Bible says that you shall know the truth and it shall do what? It shall set you free. It didn't say it would necessarily make us happy. Not that it makes us miserable, but it promised that the truth would set us free. And so my desire is that each person will take a baby step, not a giant leap, but just a baby step as each of us begin in this moment, not tomorrow's moment, not yesterday's, but in this moment to ask ourselves, what is my deepest truth? What is my deepest longing? What is my deepest hunger? Am I attending to any of those things? If not, why? What am I afraid of? What do I think will happen if I really admit how I feel? That we begin to have a real conversation with ourselves before we have it with anyone else, just with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, you hit so much there, Dr. Robin. I mean, you really, isn't that, it never ceases to amaze me looking and listening to a lot of people and looking at my own life, how for a long time, decades in my own personal life, I was compelled to look outside of myself for all the joy and purpose and, you know, people's approval of me, all those things. And the last place I want to look is right where God is anyway, like right inside of me. And it seems like it's just a human condition for most of us. Last place, it's funny, isn't it? We lose our car keys. And I describe it to my fiance and say, you know, it's amazing. I found them the last place I looked. Well, I realized that, of course, did, because once I found them, I stopped looking. I always find it in the last place I look. But it's just it never ceases to amaze me. And some of us, and including myself, can go down a very dark path for a long, long time before we'll look right where the answer lies, right inside my heart.
Well, and again, some that is so true, and often because we're even ashamed to admit that there's something that we've lost, and in this instance, what we've lost often is ourselves. And so it's really such a big deal for someone to be able to own without shame that I'm looking for me. I'm actually looking for myself. And who would be more worthy than you, than the person to say, you know, I don't know if anybody even knows that I'm missing, but I know it. And I want a different life. I want to find a new life. I want to claim a new life. I want to live a new life. And the only person who can make that happen for all of us is the self. I mean, it really, you know, we have a fantasy that someone else, you know, we've been waiting for someone. And again, it could, you know, be your boss to make your job better and a friend to be a better friend. I mean, there's always waiting for someone else. And what I say in Hungary is that our life, the person we're waiting for has always been there. It's you. It's me. I mean, the person we cannot live our life without is us. We can live without other people. It might be painful. It could be scary. It could be, but the person that we cannot live a genuine and authentic life without is the self. And that is really the invitation that I make to myself every day. And I hope that each of us will do that. There's a quote that I love from Howard Thurman. He was Dr. Howard Thurman was a mystic, and he has this quote, and it says, there's something in every one of you that waits and listens for the sound of the genuine in yourself. It is the only true guide you will ever have, and if you cannot hear it, you will all spend your days on the end of strings that somebody else pulls. And so we don't want to be on the end of strings that anybody is pulling. We don't even want to be on somebody's strings. We want to be living the life that we were each born to live, that we were meant to live, that's our God-given right to live, and to really understand that our life, it's waiting. It is waiting. It won't move on. It's not going to go live itself in someone else. It's waiting for you and for me. And there's no other way. You know, there's no other, like, shortcut. There's no easy road. But it is worth it to actually figure out what does your life want from you and what does it want from you today.
That's beautiful, Dr. Robin. I've also found out for myself that once I did pay attention, that it just keeps getting wilder and wilder. You know what I mean? Like there yes. starts to be payoffs, and I get in some ways I get more hungry as I go. You know, so
absolutely.
That's
you know, and I think Todd, what you're saying is more hungry as you go, and less willing to settle for crumbs and call it a meal. That's what absolutely. I talk about. That's part of this whole thing about emotional anorexia of calling crumbs a meal. And so you're right, the hunger increases as you go on, but it's good hunger. It's hunger for real meals and real connection. And absolutely, you know, there's a quote by Aeneas Nin that says, "And the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom."
Absolutely. I love it.
You know, and so here we are today really saying, It's too painful to stay starving. I mean, starvation is one of the worst ways to die, and it's too painful to stay tight in a bud. It's now time to blossom. And whatever comes with that, as you said, it may feel like, well, what does that mean for a football player who decides to live his life differently? Or what does that mean for a mom who makes different choices and how she's going to parent from maybe how her sister or her own mother parents. But the truth of the matter is our life right now is asking one question, which is, will you show up and be who you are?
Have you found also, I think I know the answer to this, that the more we feed ourselves, the more valuable and useful we are at helping others, you know, not be so
absolutely.
Hungry as well. It's
without
that, that's
a doubt.
So beautiful. Yeah, absolutely.
Listen, I mean, without a doubt. Yeah. I mean, for
time
sure.
Goes so
and
fast.
Yeah. I mean, with that, I mean, and I think that if people want to know how they can help someone else, how you can be a better parent, how you can help somebody else with their own hunger, take care of your own. His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, said to a person who came to a meeting and said, you know, I can't stand what's happening in Tibet, all the violence, what can I do? You know, I want to change this. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, first take care of your own pain and rage. And then
so true.
You can come back. And that's what we need to do. Let's take care of our own hunger. And then we can be a blessing to other people, not by telling them what to do, but by taking care of ourselves in a better way. We'll allow people to witness. There's nothing better than a live witness doing it, not talking it, but living it.
And that's why we share our stories as well, our own experiences. Just with the book you spoke about, it's not, of course, written in words, because that's how we publish things and communicate, but it's not just words, it's truth, it's facts,
absolutely.
It's your
absolutely.
Own experience. And that eliminates some of the debate as well.
Yes.
Listen, tell us how to get the book and how to contact you. I imagine
absolutely.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Absolutely, yes. At Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and really wherever books are sold, the book is Hungry, The Truth About Being Full. You can find out more about me and the work I'm doing and projects that are coming up, where I'll be speaking, at my website, which is drrobinsmith.com. So that's just drrobinsmith.com. And that'll tell you, you know, where I am, how to contact me. There are three books. The newest book is Hungry, The Truth About Being Full. Then there's the book right before that was Lies at the Altar, The Truth About Great Marriages. And my first book was called Inspirational Vitamins, A Guide to Personal Empowerment. So all of that information and my keynotes, and if people want me to come out and speak in their communities, wherever they are, their businesses, their, you know, places of worship, that there's a contact link and people can contact me at drrobinsmith.com.
I'm going to swipe with a very gracious man. He's a radio host. His name's Corey Perrier, and he said, I just caught it. He said he asked one of his last guests, and I thought this was such a profound question, so I'm going to ask you.
Sure.
When you first started speaking to us tonight, and we were talking about that little girl that was growing up almost like an only child because of the difference in age, if if you could talk to that little girl today, what would you tell her?
I know exactly what I would say to her. It's very simple. All is well, and everything will be fine. Enjoy the journey.
And I'm hoping she would listen. I don't know if we would exactly.
I think so.
Good. Dr. Robin Smith, thank
you so much.
Yeah,
thank you, Todd, very much to you and your audience. Be blessed, be well, be healthy, be joyful, and take care of your own holy hunger and those who are part of your village and family.
Thank you so much, Robin.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate
take
it.
Take good care. God bless.
Good night. Bye-bye. There you have it, Dr. Robin Smith. What a joy to listen to. What a lovely lady. So much in there. The time goes by so fast. Maybe we can get her back on again and talk about more of a focused topic. I just wanted to hear her story. What a joy. We apologize for any technical difficulties guests we've been having, and we have a whole bunch more coming up. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, make it a great day.